Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on The Voice of America. I'm Nabil Biagio, working on this pre-recorded program via remote. Here are some of the top stories making news across South Sudan and Sudan this Wednesday, November 10th, 2021. Health workers at the Sabah Children's Hospital are stretched thin after dozens of interns went on a strike.
Now that they are not there, work is now too much, because they were helping so much.
And Human Rights Watch and Amnesty International have called for the release of all political detainees who were arrested in Sudan following the military takeover there.
Looking at what's happening in Sudan from October 25th up to now, is this full display of disregard to fundamental rights and freedoms, whether it's stipulated upon under the Constitutional Charter or under international law.
We will have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. Amnesty International and Human Rights Watch have called on Sudan's military leaders to immediately release all civilians who were detained when the military took power on October 25. Dozens of civilian officials, political activists, and journalists were detained on that day and over the past 2 weeks. Mohammed Osman is a Sudan researcher at Human Rights Watch. He tells me the military must release all the detainees and stop the use of unnecessary force against peaceful protesters. The Central Committee of Sudanese Doctors says military violence has resulted in 14 deaths. Osman says the arbitrary arrest and forced disappearances violate international law and Sudan's own constitutional charter.
Looking at what's happening in Sudan from October 25th up to now, is this full display of disregard to fundamental rights and freedoms, whether it's stipulated upon under the Constitutional Charter or under international law. There have been series of roundups of former civilian officials, activists, protest leaders, protest groups leaders. When we address these arrests under the international law, they are qualified to be unlawful detention and enforced disappearances. This detention is being conducted by military forces, which under the Sudanese law are not allowed to detain civilians in the first place. Those who are detained are detained in undisclosed locations, according to the families who we in Human Rights Watch and Amnesty talked with many of the family members of the detainees who expressed serious concerns. Reasonably, because they don't have access to them, they don't know where they are. Some of them are in need of medical attention, for instance. They can't ensure their safety or well-being. Added to that, the military forces behind those detentions are well known of their poor rights record when it comes to respecting human rights.
The wave of arrests began at dawn on October 25th, before General Abdel Fattah al-Burhan dissolved the transitional government. What do we know about the scale of these arrests, considering the internet blackout in Sudan?
It seems to be, according to the interviews and the information we're getting on the ground, that the large bulk of the detention and arrest targeted the civilian officials happened at dawn, at the early stages of the military takeover. And following on that, there have been different incidents of arrests that happened on the 26th, for instance. They definitely, and this is here the concern around the severe disruption of the internet and telecommunication, is the fact that these abuses continue to happen in the dark. It makes it difficult for rights groups, activists, monitors to report and document abuses, including detention, in an adequate manner, especially not only in Khartoum, but also outside of Khartoum. There have been reports about also what could be described as short-term detention by these military forces, cracking down on protests. Many of them involved ill-treatment, whether by physical beating or by head-shaving, which is a practice is not new. We saw this is exact practices by the same security forces under al-Bashir regime, which tells a lot. Now we are at this stage that because these forces failed to undergo reform, failed to face actual and real accountability, That's why they're emboldened to continue the same method.
We noticed that civilians have been the target of these arrests, including the deposed prime minister himself, who was released later but put under house arrest. Also, those who were outspoken against the infringement of the military on civilian spaces were particularly targeted. I'm thinking about Moussa Al-Faki, who was a member of the Sovereign Council. I'm thinking about Khalid Omar Youssef, Minister of Cabinet Affairs. Yasser Arman, political advisor. Wajdi Saleh, who was in charge of the committee tasked with dismantling the previous regime. What does this pattern tell us?
It seems that the political opinions of those officials or activists against the military in the last weeks leading to the military takeover to be maybe one of the factors leading to their arrest or refusal to release them, which is, again, regardless, inherently violating international law, because people should not be held in detention because of the expression of their political opinion, and especially not to be done in a manner that is not in conformity to domestic or international law. I mean, clearly, as we could see now, there are many initiatives, mediations, efforts taking place on the ground, but ultimately, a lawful detention should not be a manner that is tolerated by the international regional actors when they're approaching the military leaders. It shouldn't be seen as a bargaining chip by the military. Those detained have a natural right to be free, to be released, and the ones who will be facing criminal charges to have their fair trial and due process rights fully respected.
You spoke with the families of the detainees. What do we know about their whereabouts and the conditions they're being held under?
So again, one of the issues, I mean, this is one of the areas when we could see the impact of the disruption of internet and telecommunication. Because for many in rights groups and monitoring groups, it is definitely very difficult to verify a lot of information. However, according to the families we talked with, they had absolutely no idea on where they are detained. And by whom? Of course, there are a lot of rumors behind detaining authorities that no one could verify. Many of those families reach out to the Office of the Attorney General, which is by default is the authority, the competent authority responsible of detention under Sudanese law, given that they are civilians and not military. And they were informed by prosecutorial authorities that they're not under the jurisdiction yet. So here's another indicator to the scale of the abuse that's happening. And this is why many of those families are really concerned about the safety and the well-being of their family members, because at the same time as they don't have access or information to their whereabouts, there are a lot of information on the social media that they can't verify, and it's just difficult for them to communicate with the authorities to have an answer.
Have you been in touch with the military leaders in Sudan? What have they told you? What have you told them?
No, we haven't been. We haven't been having any direct communication with the military. But of course, there are a set of calls that is addressed to the military and also addressed to the international regional actors, which are the basics in terms of what should be happening. Meanwhile, the military leaders should immediately halt on abuses. They should halt on the infringement on the right to peacefully protest, stop and cease using of lethal force against peaceful protesters. They should be releasing all former detainees. And more importantly, there should not be any backtracking or any back rollings on the reform and accountability achievements that happened during the last 2 years of the transition.
That was Mohammed Osman, Sudan researcher at Human Rights Watch. He spoke with me from Berlin, Germany. Still in Sudan, the Sudanese Teachers Association is calling on the military rulers in Sudan to observe the rule of law and protect all teachers from acts that violate their rights. This after police arrested and detained more than 70 teachers in Khartoum on Sunday. A member of the association condemned the arrests. Michael Atit reports for VOA from Khartoum.
More than 100 teachers took part in a peaceful protest Sunday at the Education Ministry of Khartoum State, demanding that the newly appointed Director General Mohamed Youssef Dawalbeit be replaced. Teachers accused the new Director General of being a member of former President Omar al-Bashir's administration. Sudanese police used tear gas and sticks to disperse the teachers during the peaceful protest. They arrested and detained 47 female and 30 male teachers for more than 12 hours before releasing them without charges. The Sudanese Doctors Association said that police beat a pregnant teacher until she miscarried. The report says more than 10 female teachers were injured and that some teachers injured their legs as they ran from the police. The Sudanese Teachers Association spokesperson Abubakar Hamid confirmed that the detained teachers were released without charges, but they were forced to write a commitment not to participate in any protest as a condition for the release. Speaking to South Sudan in Focus by phone, Hamid condemned the arrest and detention of the teachers for expressing their opinion over administrative issues.
We reject any use of force against teachers within the Ministry of Education and during the official working hours. They were expressing their opinion on an administrative issue. The matter doesn't concern police, military, nor security forces to get involved in such a situation. This is purely an internal and administrative affair.
South Sudan in Focus received no response to several calls to the Education Ministry's Director General about the allegation. The Sudanese Teachers Association is part of the Sudanese Professional Association, an influential body that had a role in ousting the Bashir in 2019. Hamid says the association will file a court case against the police for unlawfully using force against teachers who were peacefully expressing their opinion. He argues that peaceful protests are one of the fundamental human rights that are enshrined in the constitution and the teachers were expressing within the law. He called on the military leaders in Sudan to observe these basic rights and protect the teachers whenever they are.
We call for immunity for teachers in schools, their houses, and in the ministry. They are supposed to be protected by law so they can carry out their duties professionally. We need to be working in a democratic environment that respects the rule of law.
Agri Khamis Alajabu, head of the Future Senior School in Khartoum's Jebel Awliya neighborhood, also condemned the attack on teachers and called for an immediate investigation into the incident. Khamis says the teachers no longer feel safe in schools and such attacks could lead many to leave the profession.
The incident that happened to our teachers will not help the situation forward. Development of each country depends on teachers through education. This incident has affected the morale of teachers and as such affect the structure of education in the country.
Khartoum resident Siyama Abdullah, a mother of three, says beating a woman is a violation of women's rights. She says she is afraid that this incident might prompt the teachers to go on a strike.
We are afraid that such an incident might lead to a strike and they may fear for their lives as well. They will not report to their school and our children will not get lessons and we as parents will be affected as well.
Teachers threaten to go on a strike should the Sudanese security forces continue to harass them. Schools reopened early this week across Sudan after being suspended for a week due to the military takeover that ousted Sudan's Prime Minister Abdullah Hamdok. For VOA News, I'm Michael Atit in Khartoum.
And from Khartoum, we move to the South Sudanese capital, Juba, where medical workers at the Sabah Children's Hospital say they are strained after dozens of medical interns laid down their tools demanding transportation and food allowances. Patients and caregivers at the hospital say they are stranded as they have to wait for a long time before the few doctors and nurses attend to them. Winnie Chirino has that report for VOA from Juba.
Catherine Akiki's child was admitted to the Al Sabah Hospital with malaria and typhoid. She says on Sunday when she brought her son to the hospital, she found only one doctor attending to everyone, but she says she thought it was because it was a weekend, not all medical workers were at work. Akiki says after a long wait, she asked a nurse whether her child was to receive another injection. The nurse said yes and asked her to go buy the medicines so her son could get treated.
That Sunday, there were children who were brought in a critical condition. The doctor had not yet attended to them and they just died. Then there was another one that was brought and was to be attended to immediately. But when they took the child to the testing lab, there was no doctor. And I think that's what causes these delays until a child will die.
She says the only doctor available at the hospital on Tuesday was unable to check on all the patients in their ward.
The doctor is just one who is working for these people. Yesterday it was that same doctor who came to check on patients. Today the doctor came. He did not see all patients. He attended to few patients and went. We don't know the reason why the rest of the patients were not attended to. My child was not attended to since morning, and I have been waiting for the doctor to come and see him, but nothing.
Nora Justine, a nurse at Al Sabah Hospital, says she is not happy that the trainee doctors are not reporting to work anymore. She says the nurses are overloaded with work.
Now that they are not there, work is now too much. Because they were helping so much, because the work of this Al-Shabaab hospital, all the 10 seats get their treatment from here. And you know, the number of the sick people is huge. And if you are 3 or 5 only, you cannot manage. The work will be heavy. It needs in every ward at least 10 doctors in the morning hours. That is how work can be easy. And during night or evening shifts, if there are 5 doctors, it would be good.
Justin calls on the government and the hospital administration to meet the requests of the interns so they can resume work. Last week, medical interns and clinical officers training at Al Sabah wrote a petition to the hospital administration requesting COVID-19 risk allowances, monthly incentives and other benefits, including food, water and accommodation. They say the conditions at the hospital mean that for their 17-month internships, they have to work without an income. The interns walked off the job last Friday. Dr. Justin Bruno Tungon, medical director of Al Sabah Hospital, says 63 clinical officers and 16 house officers are on strike. He says the undersecretary in the National Health Ministry has agreed to pay the interns COVID-19 allowances. However, he does not know how much the allowance will be and when it will be paid. Tungon says the team also requested 50,000 South Sudanese pounds, about $125 a day for food, and 10,000 South Sudanese pounds incentive pay every month. He says he discussed this with the Minister and Director General of the Central Equatoria State Health Ministry.
State Minister of Health said they have no budget to give you 50,000 per day. They have no money to pay you monthly. They don't have that budget. If you insist you wanted this, you have come for training, we will then send you back to whoever has sent you for training because we cannot afford. Because we thought our job was to train you. But of course, after being trained, because it is practical, you also do some work, which the minister said it is useful. So maybe they will talk to their colleagues in the National Minister of Health to see how to find solution.
Tungun says he will give the striking trainees at least 2 days to see if some are willing to continue working despite the situation. He acknowledges that the intern's absence has caused problems, but he says he is determined the hospital will continue to operate smoothly with the older employed medical workers. For VOA News, I am Winnie Serino in Juba.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Coming up, United Nations officials warn that Ethiopia is on the verge of civil war. Find out more on that story after this break.
Sudan in Focus is now on WhatsApp. Send us a message on +1 202-630-8011. Tell us what's happening in your area or give us your feedback on the stories you hear on South Sudan in Focus. We look forward to hearing from you on WhatsApp. That number again, +1 202-630-8011.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. Representatives of the United Nations Security Council say time is running out on finding a political solution to the Tigray conflict before Ethiopia descends into all-out civil war. That warning comes as people in the Tigray region suffer food and fuel shortages due to a government blockade of humanitarian aid. VOA's senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sain reports.
In the capital of Ethiopia's northern Tigray region, Mekele, residents say all the fuel stations are closed, food supplies are running out, and food prices are now too high for most people to afford. Ethiopia's Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed has declared a state of emergency as Tigray fighters are advancing south towards Ethiopia's capital, Addis Ababa, taking control of two cities. State Department spokesperson Ned Price was asked Tuesday about reports that several United Nations staff members have been detained by the Ethiopian government. State Department spokesperson Ned Price.
If confirmed, we would similarly condemn arrests of UN staff members based on ethnicity. We understand from reports, as you alluded to, that those arrested are Tigrayan. Ethiopian government security forces, security force harassment and detention on the basis of ethnicity is completely unacceptable. We equally condemn revenge attacks by militants associated with the Tigray People's Liberation Front, the TPLF, and we call on all parties to cease such activities and respect human rights and the rule of law.
Price said that U.S. Special Envoy Jeffrey Feltman remains in Addis Ababa, and he said the U.S. fully supports efforts by Olusegun Obasanjo, the African Union's High Representative for the Horn of Africa. Obasanjo told the UN Security Council Monday that there is a chance for a political solution, but the window is closing fast. Olusegun Obasanjo is the African Union's High Representative for the Horn of Africa. He spoke to a UN Security Council meeting.
All these leaders here in Addis Ababa and in the North agree individually that the difference between them are political and require political solution through dialogue. This, therefore, constitutes a window of opportunity.
On Monday, Secretary of State Antony Blinken said Ethiopia was one of the issues he discussed with Egypt's foreign minister. Secretary of State Antony Blinken.
The crisis in Ethiopia also puts the stability of the Horn of Africa at risk. We continue to engage with all parties to the conflict and with partners in the region to encourage peace negotiations without preconditions in pursuit of a ceasefire.
On Sunday, Pope Francis prayed that the peaceful path of dialogue may prevail in Ethiopia. Pope Francis.
I follow with concern the news coming from the Horn of Africa, in particular from Ethiopia, affected by a conflict that has been going on for more than a year and has caused numerous victims and a serious humanitarian crisis.
Price said Addis Ababa is calm at present and again called on Americans who wish to leave Ethiopia to take commercial flights out, saying the State Department will also provide repatriation loans where needed. Cindy Sain, VOA News.
In Malawi, President Lazarus Chakwera has launched a 10-year national development plan aimed at alleviating poverty. The launch is a first step in the implementation of the Malawi Vision 2063, launched in January this year and which seeks to make Malawi a wealthy and self-reliant nation within the next 42 years. Lamek Masina reports from Blantyre.
In his televised address, Chakwera said the country can rid itself of poverty if Malawians stop what he calls retrogressive and infectious habits.
And one infectious habit we must each cure ourselves of is the habit of demanding more from our politicians than we demand from ourselves. This 10-year implementation plan, it is not just a document of what needs to be done by a president or the vice president or the parliamentarians. It is a plan of action for all of us.
Chakwera said it is concerning that up to now, some Malawians believe the president can solve their family problems.
As we speak, I have well over 500 messages on my phone requesting that I run each family for them as president. And I'm not kidding. Members of Parliament, they have messages so they can run families of their constituents. A country will never develop with that kind of spirit.
Among the key goals for the first 10 years of the Malawi 2063 strategy is to reach a capital income of $1,000 per family within the next 9 years. Currently, Malawi's capital income is ranked around $600, one of the lowest in the world. Bechani Cheleni is a lecturer in economics at Malawi University of Business and Applied Sciences. He says Malawi needs to add some enforcement measures to help the country meet its aspirations.
Maybe we needed to put in place some sort of a law, an act of parliament, maybe a one-pager or a two-pager. That clearly indicated that if there's some private sector organization or indeed anybody who's starting an organization or indeed a public institution who is going to do things without following the dictates of the vision and the implementation plan, there should have been a way to have them punished.
Sherif Kais is a lecturer in political science at Blantyre International University. He says the plan would be achieved if only people put the country's interests ahead of narrow or selfish political ones.
There is only one thing here, to put the nation first and leave the political affiliations behind, because in many cases, government plans are being changed and not even taken into being because of frustrations which always are there from different political circles. For example, if the plan is being done by the current government, you see that it can never be realized unless all stakeholders come together in a collective effort.
Malawi launched the Vision 2063 strategy in January as a follow-up to the Malawi Vision 2020 plan created in 1998, which critics believe did not realize its main goal of alleviating poverty. Lamek Masina for VOA News, Blantyre, Malawi.
And that's all we prepared for you this Wednesday. I'm Nabil Biagio. Thanks for allowing us into your vehicles, homes, and on your phones. Remember to always wash your hands with soap, practice social distancing, and wear a mask when you are in public places to protect yourself and others from coronavirus. Do not escape from COVID-19 quarantine centers because there is no cure for COVID-19. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.